Well, let's bring in an expert on ways to pay for infrastructure repair. Jack Basso is with the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. And Jack, could you just comment first on what we just heard out of Kentucky and Indiana? It sounds as if infrastructure isn't priority or the government shouldn't pay for repair until it's your bridge.
They obviously have a major problem on their hands, and it's an expensive problem. Right now, both states are struggling with how they're going to deal with making that facility capable of going forward and doing something about correcting the problems there.
And you say that this is going to be happening more and more, but that, in fact, America is at a crossroads in transportation. Let's just quote some stats that we have. Recent reports say that 12% of the country's bridges are in trouble. Rural roads are really in trouble. Twice as many fatalities on rural roads as interstates because of their width or their poor design. And this is affecting all sorts of industries, trucking, for instance. I mean, give us an example in your mind of why we are at such a crossroads.
Well, I think, first of all, for 20 years, we've been underinvesting, probably investing about 40% of the funding we needed to in transportation infrastructure, particularly highways. And when you're in that situation, you eventually start to get a lot of deterioration and a lot of backlog, and that's where we are.
So. Well, the way we pay for road and bridge repair is through the federal gas tax. The money from that tax goes into the Highway Trust Fund, but the federal gas tax hasn't been raised since 1993.
You're absolutely right, Robin, and hasn't been raised since 1993, and just if you looked at the effect of inflation, we collect 18.4 cents a gallon at the federal level. That's about $35 billion a year coming into this fund. Having not raised it since 1993, if you just looked at any reasonable measure of inflation, we've eroded the purchasing power of that 18.4 cents to the tune of about 65% of its value having disappeared.
And this is happening as we're driving more. We know travel on interstate routes in rural areas has increased by 34%. 66 cities of 50,000 or more in the U.S. don't have access to the interstate highway system because it was built in 1956. So all sorts of problems. Now, money for highway spending keeps getting short-term extensions in Congress. President Obama, as we've heard, proposing investing in infrastructure. That would be government money. But let's look at some of the alternatives that people like you are looking at for raising money. We'll talk about user fees, charging drivers more for when and where they drive. But start with privatization. Now, we understand, for instance, in Indiana, the turnpike there is privatized. Tolls have nearly doubled since it was privatized in 2006. How does privatization work? Is our roads and bridges just simply turned over to private entities?
Yeah, and that's a good question, Robin. Privatization is a very broad term. Let me narrow it down a little bit, too. It comes probably in four flavors. One is what Indiana Toll Road did, which is not to sell the toll road, but to concession it or lease it out to a capital firm to take over, operate, maintain, and basically pay for the costs of it. In addition to that, Indiana happened to get also a very big payment up front that they're investing in highways in particular out there, about $3.8 billion, if I remember correctly. There are several examples of that around the country. Texas is a big, big creator of a series of turnpikes that utilize that. In Chicago, a facility, the Chicago Skyway, is in that capacity. Colorado has been looking at some facilities. And what does that do? Well, it basically takes the need out for the public entity, be it the state or a toll authority, to produce the cash to do this. And in fact, on top of that, often is generating additional cash for investment.
Jack Basso, who's with the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. And Jack, we were talking about privatization of roads. For example, it's been done in Chicago and Indiana, and you said a benefit is the state gets this cash up front. But we left on a question. Is that cash being funneled into paying for road and bridge repair?
Yes. Now, in the case of Chicago, the money was used for a whole variety of municipal types of activities. In the case of Indiana, it all is going into the road program out there. I know that to be a fact.
And what about critics who say, all right, so they got a big amount of money up front for this privatization of the roads. In some states, they are putting it back. But still, over the long term, does it work out to the benefit of the states? How much more money could states make 40 years down the road from tolls? So has anyone factored that? You know, did that big upfront cost, was it worth it?
In the case of Indiana, the toll road that they had was actually, they hadn't been able to raise the tolls in, I believe, 20 years, and they were actually losing money on it. And what this does is basically take it out of the political equation for the most part. Now, these are not unlimited things. They don't just say, here, concessionaire, do whatever you think you want to do.
In the states that have privatized, do people feel that the roads are being maintained?
The answer is yes, and the reason that they not only feel that, but you can look at the standards. These agreements have very, very explicit performance standards and measures about maintenance and of traffic and activity and keeping the facilities in a certain state of repair. It's very rigorous.
Well, so these are, this is privatization, and again, we're tripping through this. I'm sure, you know, we could go deeper into each category, but what about public-private partnerships? Pennsylvania is a state considering what are called PPPs to repair and upgrade roads. Now, we understand that private industry would get a tax break and subsidies to invest in road improvements, but it's not a full handover. So how does this work?
In Miami, there's a major intermodal facility and tunnel complex in the Miami, Florida area, which is a public-private partnership where the private side is providing an equity position in there. They're getting a return on investment. These are toll facilities and concession facilities that utilize other types of revenue coming in. But the public sector has also got a position in that, probably about half of the investment in it, and they share the cost and the return on investment. So, and it made it possible to build those facilities, which would have been probably impossible to do if you had to come up with the total amount of public capital right up front.
But these PPPs have their critics. Professor Ellen Dannon from Penn State's Dickinson School of Law said in an op-ed in the Patriot News in central Pennsylvania that this guarantees revenue for private contractors, but it constrains the state on its decision-making. So what do you think?
You know, I think this. I think that on public-private partnerships, they fit a particular profile. If there's no revenue coming from the facility, there's nothing to attract the private sector, and the public sector doesn't have the money to do it. So I think that if these are done right and they're done with due diligence, and they work quite well, but they are limited. They are not a panacea for solving all the investment problems we have across the country.
Now, President Obama has proposed another idea, an infrastructure bank. The idea is that the government would encourage private investment in infrastructure and that the money would go into this infrastructure bank, and then those private investors would get cheap loans and loan guarantees. Some people think that it's just creating another Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So put that aside, the idea of maybe a private investment into some sort of bank, and talk about some of the ideas that would directly charge the drivers. Talk about the vehicle miles traveled pricing idea, VMTs. This is literally charging you for how much you drive?
It is, to be able to take your odometer and to say, you drive now 12,000 miles a year, we're going to charge you a monthly rate, like your electric bill, if you think of it that way, and we'll bill you.
Well, of course, anti-tax advocates don't like this. I'm wondering how business feels about it, because they drive, some businesses drive more than anyone. Other people are worried about, you know, privacy, something that will track your driving. But states like Oregon have tried this. How have they found it?
They are currently, and they're very close to this happening. They made a run at getting legislation to make that their basic system for paying for their roads. The expectation is it will, and they will convert to that. They happen to use a GPS-based system, and the privacy issues have been pretty well demonstrated to be easily protected.
Well, so that's vehicle miles traveled pricing, and then there's congestion pricing. This, as I understand it, is charging different amounts for different times of day, for different, you know, peak hours of commuting. So in other words, you might pay less to drive at 4 in the morning than you would to drive at 8 in the morning, rush hour.
We're seeing those in various flavors and forms across the country. One of the most obvious examples are what are known as high occupancy toll lanes. There's a facility where I am in the Washington, D.C. area that is a variably priced toll road that connects major parts of two counties, and that's catching on to a fair degree around the country. So.
How much further do you think it'll go, Jack Basso? You know, here in the Northeast and on the East Coast, we have things called Fast Pass, Easy Pass. Electronically, yes. They let you go through tolls. In the beginning, everybody was so, you know, suspicious of what this meant. People maybe tracking you in that way. But now you feel like an idiot if you don't have one, if you pull up to a toll and you have to wait, you know, 10 times as long. Do you think there is the will to make some of these other changes you've talked about?
I actually do, because I think as we kind of get past, you know, if you will, the mythology that suddenly government's going to be tracking your every move, I think these things will catch on more and more, particularly if they help people to be able to move around much more easily than they can right now in these highly congested areas.
Well, in some of the other areas, help pay for bridges so they don't fall down. Jack Basso,
exactly.
Director of Program Finance and Management at the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. Thanks so much.